Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Adam Ragusa. The end of 2010 is nigh, and Boston City Councilor Michael Ross has presided over his last meeting as council president. Ross may just enjoy the reprieve. His term as council president included the expulsion of Councilor Chuck Turner, a very public contract showdown with the city firefighters, closure threats at the Boston Public Libraries that ended up not panning out, more closure threats at the Boston Public Schools that are looking like they probably will, and that was all in the past year, one of the two he served as council president. Mike Ross isn't going anywhere, of course. Next month, Councilor Stephen Murphy will assume the presidency, and Ross will continue to hold his role as a regular old councilor. He was reelected, after all. And as he embarks on that transition, we've invited Ross back to the show to review his tenure as president and look forward to the next year. Councilor Ross, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for the opportunity. Good to see you, and Happy New Year to you.
You were out shoveling yesterday, I presume?
There was some shoveling going on, yeah, and mostly checking on, you know, the folks and make sure that they were all shoveled.
They live in Newton, right?
My dad's in Newton. My mom's in Gloucester, and, you know, different snowfalls depending on, you know,
where
the storm is.
So David Bernstein, the political writer for The Phoenix, wrote this recently. He wrote, "The notoriously irrelevant Boston City Council has been acting surprisingly relevant this past year." Now, we'll get to some of those surprisingly relevant actions in a minute. But, I mean, anybody who follows council politics knows you're an ambitious young guy hoping for an upward trajectory. But now you're losing your pitch. You're losing your perch, I should say, aren't you? I mean, how are you going to handle that?
Well, you know, the work isn't really just about defining my political future. It's also about, you know, responsibly governing this city. And I like to think that not just me, but the entire city council performed well over the last couple of years. You know, we did things that maybe we moved out of our comfort zone in certain places. We tried different things. We made our business more transparent, more easily accessible to the public. We worked on some tough issues in your intro that you talked about. I think we also reached out to outside the building, talked to professors, went to trips, went to New York to look at what they're doing with education, with their parks.
To the Harlem Children's Zone.
I went with you. You missed the road trip to Los Angeles, of course, where we looked at food trucks and brought back some of those ideas. But my point is that we're looking outside of the building, outside the body, to come up with new ideas and smarter ways of doing things.
You made an announcement recently with regard to the council's transparency.
Yeah, so 2 years ago, prior to my assuming the role of council president, if you wanted to see what the council was working on, you'd have to walk into City Hall, go up to the sixth floor, walk into the clerk's office, and plunk down 50 cents on the desk to get a single copy of what was just filed that day in the council. That's ridiculous, of course. And what we put rules in place right away that requires everything to be PDF'd, and it all has to be transparent, all has to be online, and it all has to be done that day. We've now taken a next step, which is we're going to have video, we're going to have tablets on city councilors' desks, and there's going to be even more transparency. We're kind of peeling back the onion even more, allowing the public to not just find out what you worked on that day, but anything relating to that matter for the last several years. And, you know, this is also going to save us money.
So this is going to be web-based? People are going to be able to see council agendas really easily, documents?
I mean, you go to the agenda, and it's like you drill on anything on the agenda. What did they talk about? They talked about dog parks. Next thing you know, you'll pull up the video from that, you know, actual meeting of where they were talking about dog parks. You don't have to search for it or look for it yourself. So it's really going to provide some real transparency to the public.
Listeners, we're talking to Boston City Councilor Mike Ross. He's stepping down as president at the end of the year, which is like, you know, 5 minutes away. What are you hoping the Boston City Council does next year? What do you wish they'd done this year? What questions do you have for Mike Ross? Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And the Globe story about that about this software that you're installing at the council, I learned something about you I'd never known, which is that your first job at City Hall was webmaster.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, it was 1994. It was my first job. I was dying to get kind of, into the building. You know, it was a dream of mine to work in local government. I didn't know or think that I'd be elected, but, you know, I wanted to get involved. As you may know, my father was a street worker. He was a survivor of the Holocaust and came to Boston.
Sure.
And did that very important work. So the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. So I had somehow wound up in the technology department. And I went to my boss.
Were you just a computer geek growing up?
And you know, I grew up with computers, like anyone in, you know, who was graduating in 93 from college at that
sure.
time, and 89 from high school at that time. And I went to my boss. I said, "Boss, we need a website for the city of Boston. Other cities are doing this. Is this something I might be able to work on?" He said, "You know, knock yourself out." And within a year, we were the best website in America. Government Technology Magazine had awarded that distinction because we were allowing online transactions with credit cards to pay for fees and fines and parking tickets and those kinds of things.
So as we mentioned before, I think there's a consensus that the city council, which has been second, third, fifth, tenth fiddle to the mayor in the city of Boston for a long time, has really reasserted itself to an extent under your leadership. So let's go through some of the events that really marked that period, and we'll go backwards in time. So let's start with the whole Chuck Turner thing. When did you come to the conclusion that Turner needed to be removed from his seat on the council after being convicted of corruption charges?
Well, you know, 2 years ago, when I had become the president, he had already been arrested and he had already been indicted. And let me preface this by saying it gives me no modicum of pleasure to be talking about removing Chuck Turner as a feather in my hat or anything like that. It was a horrible thing that we had to do. I just think we got through it as best we could, and people think the way we did it was good. I even think people who were supporting Chuck Turner felt like we did it fairly and equitably and precisely. But we had no rules in place. We had no rules on how to govern behavior of members prior to my being elected president. We put those rules in place, and then just recently, in December 1, we enacted those very rules. It was very easy when you think about it, because we planned for, in some ways, we planned for the worst case, and the worst case occurred, and Councilor Turner agreed with our planning and voted for it, and in the end was, you know, wound up getting voted off.
In a letter to the council members late last month, you wrote that many are cynical of government as it is. We cannot add to their mistrust. Is that really just the heart of the issue, the appearance of the council?
Well, it's, you know, what I had said all along is paramount to any consideration is the council as a whole. It's not about any one member. It can't be about, you know, giving Councilor Turner a break. It has to be about what is the entire, you know, body, what is the integrity of the entire body about. And, yeah, I feel that people are cynical of legislative bodies and elected officials in general. And I think one way we can earn back that trust is do what we say we're going to do. And, you know, in this case, it was to take that vote on Councilor Turner and to move forward as we did.
Let's go back to the firefighters' contract over the summer. Now, this was a deal in which Mayor Menino and the union took the lead and came to an agreement over what some people felt were pretty substantial raises in exchange for drug and alcohol testing, which then had to essentially be rubber stamped by the council. Now, you helped broker the final deal. But was this really a fight between Menino? I guess a lot of people thought this was really a fight between Menino and the union. And you were quoted expressing disappointment at the time that Menino had made public some of the negotiations before they were finished. Did you at times feel strong-armed by the mayor's office during that whole episode?
Not so much by the mayor's office. The common wisdom was that the council was just going to rubber stamp this thing. That's what it had done in the past, and that's really what everyone was expecting. And I felt that first of all, that's a horrible legacy to live up to, and it's also it's not the right thing to do. I mean, this is at a time when the worst economy of our lifetimes, people weren't seeing these types of raises. The outrage from the public was palpable, and we needed to do at least our job, which was hold the hearing, look at this, and find out exactly what this is. And as we kind of unwrapped what this was and got expert advice from outside the building, MIT professor Tom Kochan sure. helped us. We made sense of it, and the sense was this doesn't make sense. And I said at that point, I can't support it. And at that point, there was a group of other city councilors who also started to say that, and we kind of did a redo and got both parties together and wound up saving the public $45 million in a much better deal that was by no means a rubber stamp and was a much better deal for the public.
Was that a rebuke of the mayor?
No, it was, you know, the mayor was in a process that has been put in place that is extremely complicated. And in the end, that process marches forward. And unless the council's willing to step up and say, hold on, this isn't a good deal for the taxpayers, it's going to march forward. In some way, it was inevitable that he had no choice but to present what was presented to the council. So, look, I mean, the council stood together. We performed our duties, I think, very well in that case and other cases as well. And when the council does that, it's not a rebuke to the mayor. It's performing our job as partners in government.
We're talking to City Council President Mike Ross. He's finishing up his term as president in these last couple of days of the year here. Any questions or comments you have for him, give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. One of your pet issues, Council President Ross, has been parks, and especially the Boston Common. We have a caller from South Boston who has a different parks question. This is Jennifer. Hey, Jennifer.
Hi, how are you?
I
live in the Fort Point neighborhood, and we've actually had a baby boom in this neighborhood in the last few years.
I've noticed.
Lots of young children, and there's no outdoor children's park. And the Children's Museum, who I've been talking to for many years, has canceled their plans to build an outdoor park because of lack of funds. And we've actually talked to Kaboom in Washington, D.C., who are willing to partially fund the equipment for it, but we don't have land to put it on. And there's been such a slow development of the public park facet of this neighborhood that, you know, I don't see it happening, you know, for another 10 years. So I'm wondering how we can go about working with the Boston City Council.
So it's a good question, Jennifer. Certainly there's plenty of surface parking down in Fort Point in the South Boston waterfront area. Room for a park?
I mean, look, I think what her question's perfect. This is why people stay in cities, you know, these stickiness factors that attract you and keep you here. And parks are part of that. I would encourage her to work with her city councilor, Councilor Bill Lenihan, work with the mayor's office, organize her neighbors, and get that park. I think it's infinitely doable, yes. This is what makes a city great. You know, one of my first things I was able to do when I first got elected was create dog parks in the city.
Sure.
We had previously only had the leash law. There were no provisions that allowed for dog parks. And now, you know, you see dog parks across the city and people, you know, get to bring their pets and run around. I mean, these things, we're trying to bring food trucks here. We're working on, as you mentioned, a restaurant in the Common, a little burger stand in the Common. These are things that make the city more fun and more, you know, engaging. More, these amenities are just as important as some of the other things that government does regularly, like education and public safety.
Those amenities, though, can really seem a little bit frivolous in the face of, like, this year's crime statistics. Overall crime was about even, but homicide was way up. 74 homicides compared with 46 last year so far, an increase of over 60%. Why do you think that's been?
Well, obviously, the economy is always going to play into to crime and the ability to leverage our resources. You know, I'll have a chance to take a closer look at public safety. It appears that if Councilor Murphy is elected president, that there'll be an opening there. And, you know, I don't want to take his announcement away, but there might be a logical opportunity for me to work in that area. I believe that we have more to do in when it comes to public safety. And I also think that public safety can be an economic development creator. I think it has the opportunity to take dead spaces and scary spaces in our city and turn them into safe places that become parks, that become retail, that become, you know, kind of exciting places to go. So there's a continuum, there's a connection between public safety and economic development and successful cities that I'd like to spend some more time with.
Let's talk about schools. This year, Boston Public Schools mired in debates over school closings with the teachers' union. What's your opinion of how the district is doing this year?
You know, the superintendent needed to make these announcements, needed to close schools. I wish she spent a little more time deliberating on the decision. I mean, the announcement, I represent Mission Hills, one of my neighborhoods. The Farragut School was announced, 2 weeks prior to the vote that they were going to close, and then 2 weeks later, the vote was taken. I mean, that's just not enough time to react. This is an almost billion-dollar enterprise, the Boston Public Schools Department. They should be able to work through decision making longer than a 2 week turnaround.
Sure, but they've got a school stay. They've got to close schools in order to stay afloat. They have a budget line they have to meet. Isn't it best if parents deal with that reality sooner rather than later?
Yeah, parents are making decisions that are affecting them over years, over generations. We owe it to them to help them plan a little bit better than without thwarting something on them within a 2 week turnaround. So, look, we needed to close schools. We're going to need to close schools. We'll need to close probably a few more. It's just the way we do things in government is very important.
You created a group called the Citizens Committee on Boston's Future to try to keep residents in Boston after they finish school, to close that brain drain. What do you see as driving that apparent exodus that's been documented by the Boston Fed, among others?
Yeah, we're in trouble in this area. I mean, we're losing, I guess, the average increase in this age of 20 to 24-year-olds across the country has been about 11%. For the last 10 years. During that same time, Boston actually lost in that population by about 1.5 percentage points. This at a time when we're getting tremendous increase of enrollments of undergrads. What's driving it? It's obviously jobs, housing, and amenities. So we need to build more housing, whether that housing is a dormitory or whether that housing is a house or a condo
Sure.
or an apartment. Jobs, because those two are mutually, if we continue to lose young people, the job providers will have to go to other places. And they are. I mean, Texas is booming right now. And, they're working hard to draw away our companies. So we need to work harder. And we need to, it's those three things. It's jobs, it's housing, it's amenities. I think the city can be very aggressive around housing and very aggressive around amenities.
Yeah, but if one of the factors is housing, then wouldn't the new Boston property tax hike, 7.5% this year, be a step in the wrong direction? I mean, if recent grads are priced out already, won't this just push them towards a more early exit?
Grads aren't being priced out because of property taxes. They're being priced out because of occupancy realities. There are no places for them to move. The occupancy rates are extremely low in the city of Boston, or extremely high.
Yeah.
I mean, the unoccupancy is very low. Extremely high in the city. We need to build more housing. And building more housing, by the way, will spread the tax base around. And we're a college town, and we need to plan and act like it a little bit more, and we need to build more housing. In the last 10 years—
Well, why isn't that happening?
I think we've been playing catch-up with ourselves. I mean, in the last 10 years, I think we've brought in another 30,000 undergrads into the city, which is great. This is the envy of the rest of the country. We've only built 10,000 undergrad dormitory spaces. So it's a net loss of around 20,000, maybe more, 20 to 30,000 in this area. Only until recently did we even know how many undergrads lived in this city. We have some laws that actually I helped pass on the council that now tell us how many undergrads we have living here. So all those things we've talked about and many other things we haven't are the things that we're going to need to do to keep young people here. It's not just limited to city government. It's also state government. We need to expand, the night MBTA night hours later into the evening. We need to create
Drunks on the Green Line. Great idea.
Listen, we need to do more to attract and keep people like other cities. We're one of the earliest closing times for MBTA
Sure.
for transit in the entire country. El Paso is the only city that I think closes earlier than we do.
We're just finishing up talking with Mike Ross, who is finishing up his term as president of the Boston City Council. He'll be a rank-and-file member of the council in a couple of days. You're a young guy. How old are you?
39. I just turned 39.
Okay, so what's next for you? Are you going to follow Michael Flaherty's footsteps and run for mayor?
That's a long way away.
Really?
Well,
I mean,
what you're talking about, the next mayor's race is 2013.
People get ready for these things pretty far in advance these days.
Yeah, I suppose they do. What I'm focused on is trying to end my year well, and then try to keep the momentum going. I think that we did achieve an awful lot on the city council, and a lot of that I'm very proud of, and I'd like to maintain that level of activity and delivery for the citizens of the city.
Think that like 5 or 6 members of the council right now, it's been said, have mayoral ambitions. All the recent mayors have come from the council, and the council, as many people have admitted many times, has really limited power in Boston, just the way the city government is structured. Is the city council more of like a finishing school for higher office right now? Is it a chamber for mayors in waiting?
I think we showed that the council is not just a weak body. I think we've shown a different council over these last over these last couple of years, I think we've changed that perception. So, you know, I'm proud to be a member of the city council, and my colleagues have done some great things these last couple of years and before.
Well, you could break some news right now if you tell us that you're running. I'm going to give you one last shot.
There'll be no news broken on that, but I appreciate the
whoops
question.
All right. Well, Mike Ross is, as of this very moment, president of the Boston City Council. He's stepping down at the end of this month due to term limits on the council presidency. We're back after a short break talking about a class at the at a Boston casting firm for helping folks lose their accents. Mike, I think that you have a story about Sal Lamantina and his accent.
Well, his brother-in-law was asked by his employer if he wants to lose it, and he said no. He goes, you know what? It's become my greatest asset. He uses it, and he's in California, so everyone asks him, where are you from? Oh, I love Boston. It's been great for him.
You think you can get elected mayor without a wicked Boston accent?
Maybe I'll have to go to finishing school to get one.
Stay with us. I'm Adam Ragusea. This is Radio Boston.